From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris. Years from now, it's likely this week will be examined as an important chapter in the Obama presidency. Mr. Obama accepted the Nobel Peace Prize 1 week after announcing a major escalation in the war in Afghanistan. We're going to begin this hour with our regular political observers, columnist David Brooks of The New York Times and E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Georgetown University. This week, E.J. happens to be joining us from Paris. Welcome back to both of you. And EJ, I guess to you, I should say, ça va.
Ça va. Merci bien.
Well, I'm going to begin here in the studio where David is sitting across from me. David, President Obama accepted the Nobel Prize while embracing the use of military might in defense of a just war. He had to walk through quite a minefield to pull that off. Did he? Did he strike the right balance?
I thought so. I thought it was a brilliant speech, one of the best speeches he's given as president and maybe ever. It really was a restatement of post-war liberalism, post-World War II liberalism, a statement that there's evil in the world, that war is sometimes necessary to preserve good things and to champion idealistic causes. And he really drew on this philosopher, Reinhold Niebuhr, who talked about the irony of history and the tragedy of history and the way it propels you toward war. But what was especially interesting, I thought, he cited somebody else who was also deeply influenced by Niebuhr, and that was Martin Luther King. And King took it in a pacifist direction, and Obama takes it in a different direction. And while not putting himself on the same level as King, he had this little debate about that. And so I thought it was a tremendously sophisticated speech and tremendously successful.
EJ, I want to hear from you for just a minute. We just happen to have that cut, and maybe we should listen to it before we actually hear from EJ. So hold on just a minute. Let's listen.
As Dr. King said at this occasion so many years ago, I refuse to accept despair as the final response to the ambiguities of history. I refuse to accept the idea that the isness of man's present condition makes him morally incapable of reaching up for the eternal oughtness that forever confronts him. Let us reach for the world that ought to be, that spark of the divine that still steers within each of our souls.
EJ, we heard the president there talk about the spark of the divine, but he also, though not directly, did reference the thunder of the gun. Did he, to your mind, strike the right balance?
First of all, I like a president willing to talk about isness and oughtness, that you don't run into that every day. And I knew when he gave this speech that he had hit some sweet spot that hit both David and me and would hit David and me in much the same way. Barack Obama is not a pacifist. A president of the United States cannot be a pacifist. And what I thought was so powerful is that he acknowledged the need of war, again, in a very Niebuhrian way, as David suggested, but in a way that said war is terrible. War is a tragedy. War is not to be celebrated. It just happens to be necessary. The other thing I think that he did that was a classic Obama move, because Obama's all about sort of inner balances and trying to find them, that you can be a realist and still be an idealist. You can stand up for human rights and still deal with dictatorships when you have to. And you realized how deeply Obama believes in realism by the fact that he was willing to praise that arch realist, Richard Nixon, for his opening to China. But as David suggested, this was very much a 1940s liberal sort of speech. He channeled FDR, too, in emphasizing social justice. True peace is not just freedom from fear, but freedom from want. He didn't quote FDR directly, but that's who he was quoting.
And in quoting them, you note that that is actually what anyone who served in World War II, that is actually what is on their medals that they received. EJ, I'm going to stick with you for just a minute because you are in Europe. I want to ask you about the Obama brand over there. Part of his appeal in Europe was that he ran on a peace platform. Now that his presidency has taken on a much more hawkish tone, is the bloom off the rose?
Well, you know, Europeans, as their ability to fight many wars over many years has shown, are not themselves pacifists. And they still love Barack Obama. They're still happy he's president. They're still happy President Bush isn't there anymore. But there is a tiny bit of Obama malaise. Some people ask, for example, why couldn't he go to the anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall? Yeah, we know he knows that China and Asia are the future, but, you know, he didn't have to rub it in by not showing up. How did he mess up the first round of the Israeli-Palestinian negotiations? So there is a kind of second phase, this, as I say, this very mild malaise. But there is even pushback against that. I heard Hubert Védrine, the former foreign minister, give a speech today, and he was very critical of the United States. And he said that, you know, Europeans should stop criticizing Barack Obama and stop helping him. There's still that sentiment out there.
You know, we don't have a lot of time left, David, but I just want to turn to the economy very quickly, if I can. And looking to Europe, might this administration find a way forward in dealing with the economic problems here? Should this country and the president's economic team consider following Britain's lead, for instance, by taxing bankers? Would that be an important symbolic gesture? Just very quickly.
Well, there's a good reason to sort of slow down the nature of our Wall Street trading, because that sort of got out of control. But the problem is the British are facing is that if you tax it here, it'll just migrate there. And so I think we're both trying to play chicken with the other.
So they can just move money back and forth. EJ, I'd love to hear from you, but unfortunately we're out of time, so I'll have to say goodbye for now. But I know you'll both be back. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Au revoir.
Au revoir.
That's David Brooks of the New York Times and EJ Dion of the Washington Post and Georgetown University joining us there from Paris.